Hi, it's Amy Siskin of The Weekly List and author of the book The List, and welcome to episode 24 of The Weekly List podcast, which accompanies week 106 on The Weekly List website, theweeklylist.org, and corresponds to the week ended November 24th, 2018. Welcome. So there's no such thing as a slow holiday week in the era of Trump. Even though this week was Thanksgiving, it was also chaos and a stream of news and broken presidents and things that are not normal. We're going to talk about a number of things that got little media coverage in the chaos, but I want to surface one item up front that we're going to discuss, and that was a story by the Washington Post on the discovery of a personal email account, which we've talked about before in the weekly list, but more information about it, for Ivanka Trump that she used for White House business, which is remarkably similar to Trump's main campaign thrust against Hillary Clinton and Crooked Hillary and her emails. But after 24 hours, maybe 48 max, that story completely fell away. Other things we were focused on this week were breaks of norms. We talked and we've been speaking about the death of journalist Kamel Khashoggi, and it came out last week. We discussed on the podcast that the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia was behind it. Trump broke with precedent again this week and refused to do anything to condemn Saudi Arabia. We're going to be talking about that. Him bypassing advice of White House counsel to give troops at the U.S.-Mexico border the right to use lethal force, attacking the admiral who oversaw the Osama bin Laden attack. These are the kind of things that are happening every week, every day. And just an observation here, folks, as we've passed the midterms and we've been speaking about how crazy Trump has been in the time leading up to and after. This week seemed, just watching him as I do each week, he seems especially frantic and belligerent, as if he's at the last bit here before the new sheriff comes to town, and that is the House that is going to put a check on him and start to issue subpoenas and conduct investigations. There's also signs that the Mueller probe is close to winding up, and we're hoping to see more indictments and the outcome of what that probe has found. But the combination of those facts has made Trump seem, even by his low standards, to be operating right now as a car careening off the side of the highway from side to side, not sure which side it's going to go off of. But anyway, before we get into Trump and his actions, I just want to give some more reporting. We're still getting data in from midterms, but here's some things that we learned this week. The Washington Post reported that of the 277 women who ran in the midterms, a record 124 have won so far. There are still a few open races. In the next session, there will be 102 women in the House of Representatives, 13 in the Senate, and 9 governors. Again, that's a record in the year of the woman. As midterm votes continue to be counted, Democrats held a popular vote lead over Republicans in the House of more than 8.6 million votes, the largest midterm margin since Watergate, which was 8.7 million. And it looks like the Democrats will pick up close to 40 seats. A Quinnipiac poll found that nearly 60% of Americans disapprove of the way Trump is handling race relations. Republicans approve by 76% and Democrats disapprove by 93%. So now let's head into week 106, which started off as we ended last week with Trump's trip to California. And like I said, everyone was so excited to have him there after he spent the week trashing California residents and firefighters. But he did arrive on Saturday afternoon on his trip to California, where in the beginning of the week, already 76 were dead in the wildfires. And he claimed Finland does not have wildfires because crews, quote, spend a lot of time raking and cleaning and doing things to clean forest fires. This led to people in Finland sending all sorts of funny memes, which I can't include in my weekly list. But anyways, needless to say, we were once again the laughingstock of the world. On Sunday, the Finnish president said in an interview, he spoke to Trump briefly about forest management when they were in Paris together, but that he has no idea where Trump got the idea that raking is part of his country's routine. Then also later Saturday, there were accusations as Vice President Pence was traveling on Trump's stead to Asia Pacific, questioning his loyalty, and Pence laughed that off, suggesting that he was not even going to dignify that with a comment. But again, more signs of Trump's paranoia. On Sunday, 2 days after the White House demanded decorum at press conferences after the battle in our podcast last week over press passes for Jim Acosta and the White House setting out these new rules on decorum, on Sunday, Trump tweeted, "So funny to see little Adam Schiff," but spelled the word S-C-H-I-T-T. Yes, we are in third grade now. Misspelling the incoming House Intelligence Chair Committee's name, which is great decorum. On Sunday, we had spoken a little bit in the last podcast about Trump's interview with Chris Wallace for Fox News Sunday. We got the full interview this week, lucky us. And we got Trump telling Chris Wallace that he would not overrule his acting attorney general, Matthew Whitaker, if he decides to curtail the Mueller probe, saying, quote, "I would not get involved." Trump also claimed he, quote, "did not know Whitaker took views on the Mueller investigation before appointing him." That's lie what? Number 6,000, blah, blah, blah. Adding, "I think I've wasted enough time on this witch hunt," that's being the Mueller probe. "Probably we're finished." When asked by Chris Wallace about retired Admiral William McRaven, who oversaw the operation that killed Osama bin Laden, Trump called him a, quote, "Hillary Clinton fan" and a, quote, "Obama backer." Trump attacked McRaven, saying he should have apprehended bin Laden sooner. Okay, I just need to like step back here for a second. This is the five-time draft dodger who did not serve attacking a decorated Admiral Navy SEAL. Okay, so I just had to set that out. McRaven had publicly defended former CIA Director John Brennan in an op-ed when Trump revoked his security clearance in week 92. So that's why Trump is acting like a third grader and attacking him. On Monday, Trump attacked McRaven again, tweeting, quote, "We should have captured Osama bin Laden long before we did," claiming he, meaning Trump, wrote in his book just before the attack on the World Trade Center, because we all know Trump is a foreign policy genius. Trump also tweeted, quote, "We paid Pakistan billions of dollars, fools." The New York Times did a fact check, and Trump's claim of his book is untrue. There is one mention of bin Laden, but it was after he was already one of the world's most wanted terrorists. On Monday, the Republican National Committee's Twitter account joined Trump in attacking McRaven. So good, the Republicans are in on it now. Claiming he was, quote, "Hillary on Hillary Clinton's shortlist for vice president in 2016, and, quote, "He's hardly a non-political figure." Again, this is a Republican National Committee attacking him now. McRaven's name did appear on a lengthy list of possible Clinton 2016 running mates, as it did on Trump's list, although McRaven did not endorse a candidate. By the way, McRaven has also recently been battling leukemia. So while Trump was busy attacking McRaven, on Tuesday, reporters noticed something, and that is, why has Trump yet to visit troops in a combat zone, breaking precedents of heads of states throughout history? Trump said he plans to visit a war zone, but did not specify where or when. He claims he has not visited troops because he does not want to associate himself with wars he views as failures. He also cited the long flights and potential security risks as reasons to avoid visits. Again, unprecedented. Again, criticizing a former admiral, again, having not served. Now I want to talk about our section that we do every week called Everyday Racism. There were a number of developments on the front of what's happening with immigrants. And also, we continue to hear stories of the rise of white supremacists. So let's get into it. On Sunday, the San Francisco Chronicle reported that a record 14,056 migrant children are in Department of Health and Human Services custody, topping a record from 2 months ago of roughly 12,000. And this is in an already overburdened system. Under Trump, ICE background checks on sponsors have resulted in arrests of undocumented adults who come forward to take custody of the children, leaving more children spending time in holding facilities. Previous administrations did not use immigration status in determining the release of children into sponsor care, but Trump's ICE uses it as a way to catch them. How fun. HHS has opened 10 facilities in Texas, which can house thousands more children. These are basically internment camps for migrant children, over 14,000. The New York Times reported the price tag for the regime reuniting families separated under Trump's zero tolerance policy is $80 million and rising, with 140 children out of the roughly 2,500 still in custody. On average, it has cost $30,000 per child to reunite with their families. On Monday, the Washington Post reported documents filed in a challenge to the question of the 2020 census survey revealed that the Trump regime privately discussed the possibility of sharing future census information with law enforcement. So again, that's another example of abusing the system in order to try to entrap people. Experts warn such a move could have a chilling effect on response rates, as well as cautioning that the Justice Department does not have the authority to change the rules. On Monday, the Seattle Times reported a yogurt store owner called 911 on behalf of the employees at a store who complained about a, quote, unwanted subject, saying customers are, quote, kind of scared because he looks suspicious. The man, Byron Ragland, why was he suspicious? Because he's a black man. He was there doing his job, supervising a parent-child visit. Ragland is also a 9-year veteran of the U.S. Air Force, a psychology student at the University of Washington, and as I mentioned, a black man, which makes him a prime target. A white woman in Phoenix went on a racist rant when Lenny's Bermudez Molina asked if she could sit in an open seat next to her, saying, quote, I prefer white. Let's just put it like that. She continued, I would prefer the whole freaking nation be white. How about that? Oh, it's going to happen. You're going to be wiped out. Trust me. This took place in Phoenix, and the woman was smart enough to videotape it and post it so we could hear this racist rant. College campuses are reporting an uptick again in anti-Semitism. This week, Cornell University reported 3 swastikas in 9 days, and at Duke University, a tribute to victims of Tree of Life synagogue massacre was defaced by a large red swastika. On Monday, The Guardian reported, according to documents released by the Washington State law enforcement, the FBI now classifies far-right Proud Boys as a, quote, extremist group with ties to white nationalism. The document revealed that the Proud Boy members have contributed to the recent escalation of violence at political rallies held on college campuses and have a long history of misogyny and glorifying violence. On Wednesday, NBC News reported the sister organization, the Proud Boys Girls, has also been classified as extremist. A female sheriff deputy in Washington state was fired in July for her affiliation to the group. On Friday, Proud Boy founder Gavin McGinnis publicly claimed in a video to have quit the extremist group, saying, I'm officially dissociating myself from the Proud Boys. McGinnis blames his departure on the New York City Nine, which are the nine who were involved in a brawl that we documented in the earlier weeks, eight of whom have been arrested by NYPD. He claims, "I am told by my legal team and law enforcement that this gesture could help alleviate the sentencing." McGinnis, by the way, is in the United States on a green card. PBS Frontline released the second part in their series, Documenting Hate, New Nazi America, which reported on the resurgence of white supremacist groups and their recruiting inside the U.S. military. Highly recommend, if you haven't already, to watch these two segments, PBS Frontline. Again, New American Nazis, well worth the watch. The Mashpee Wampanoag tribe protested outside the U.S. Capitol on Thanksgiving Day over the Trump Department of Interior's alternative interpretation of the Indian Reorganization Act to take away their land. WOSU Radio, see, there's something in it for everyone. Now it's women's turn. WOSU Radio reported the Ohio legislator is weighing a bill during the lame duck session which would ban abortion entirely and would allow criminal charges against both doctors and pregnant women seeking abortions. A federal judge in Mississippi struck down an abortion ban after 15 weeks, passed by the state legislature in March. The judge derided the legislation, saying it, quote, professed interest in women's health is pure gaslighting. The judge also noted, despite the state's ranking as the most medically challenged for women, the state leaders are silent on expanding Medicare and, quote, are alarming infant and maternal mortality rates. On Tuesday, a group of 38 Republicans in the House sent a letter to Trump calling on him to scrap protections for LGBTQ workers included in the newly negotiated NAFTA trade proposal with Mexico and Canada. On Friday, the Trump regime asked the Supreme Court to bypass the usual legal process and to immediately take up Trump's transgender military ban on the issue in its current term. The Solicitor General asked the court to consolidate challenges to the ban and rule on this issue, saying, quote, the decision imposing these injunctions are wrong and they warrant this court's immediate review because, God forbid, transgender individuals are serving in the military. Lawyers representing challenges said there's no need to abandon the norms of the Supreme Court, waiting to take action until regional appeals have been ruled. Also questioned the urgency of the Trump regime. So when I say like there's something in it for everyone, let's just remember we've talked about anti-Semitism, racism, sexism, misogyny, and homophobia and xenophobia. And this is just in 1 week, but we're not done. On Tuesday, a photo of Mississippi Senator Cindy Hyde-Smith wearing a Confederate soldier's hat and holding a rifle surfaced on Facebook. The photo was taken during a 2014 visit to the home of Jefferson Davis, president of the Confederacy. On Tuesday, Trump defended Hyde-Smith's lynching comment that we talked about last week, dismissing her comment as a joke and adding, quote, she is a tremendous woman and it is a shame that she has to go through this. Following the lynching comment, several corporations, including Pfizer, Amgen, Walmart, AT&T, and others, asked to have their campaign donations to Hyde-Smith returned. On Tuesday, bowing to pressure, Hyde-Smith, during a debate with Mike Espy, offered a qualified apology, saying her comments did not, saying she did not mean she would enjoy any type of capital punishment. But for anyone that was offended by my comments, I certainly apologize. How grand. And the one bit of good news, a rule change was proposed by Nancy Pelosi, which would overturn an 181-year ban on religious headwear on the floor of the Congress, as we proudly this year will be having two Muslim American women enter Congress, Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib. So that was hate this week. And now I want to talk about the photo that goes along with week 106 of our U.S. troops having Thanksgiving at the border after Trump's fake migrant crisis that he invented just before the midterms, stoked the flames of hate, sent down 5,600 troops, and there they are in week 106 photo, away from their families, doing nothing, having dinner in a tent, army food. On Monday, Politico reported the general overseeing the deployment of troops at the U.S.-Mexico border said the troops will start heading home in the coming days, having completed the mission for which they were sent, e.g., there was no mission. Army Lieutenant General Jeffrey Buchanan said the first troops have started to leave and all troops will be home by December 15th in time for Christmas. On Tuesday, Buchanan's command appeared to backpedal on a statement, which they said seemed to suggest the deployment was unnecessary, saying no specific timeline for redeployment has been determined. So what did Trump do then? He tried to come up with new ways to stir the flames of hate. On Wednesday, the Washington Post reported, according to Department of Homeland Security memo, the Trump regime is considering sweeping new measures which would force asylum seekers to wait in Mexico as their cases are processed. The regime's plan, known as Remain in Mexico, that's the name of it, Remain in Mexico. Stephen Miller is so clever. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise. Remain in Mexico would be a major change from the current screening procedures, which generally allow those who fear returning to their home countries to avoid immediate deportation. Trump has repeatedly said he despises the current system, known as catch and release by him, which allows migrants to remain in the U.S. until they can get a hearing with an immigration judge, because that is our laws. Trump has pledged to end this. Under Trump's plan, asylum seekers would have to meet a higher bar in the screening procedure that they fear persecution in Mexico in order to meet the requirement for immediate admission to the U.S. So that was one thing that they're working on. And then on Thursday, Politico reported on a fiery West Wing meeting presided over by Trump Monday on the topic of granting troops at the U.S.-Mexico border the right to use lethal force to defend Border Patrol agents. John Kelly and Kirstjen Nielsen were initially against the measure, saying it was beyond Trump's constitutional powers. Pitted against all the other attendees, including Trump and Stephen Miller, and also Chris Crane, who's the president of ICE, and Brandon Judd, president of Border Patrol Union, it devolved into a melee. Ultimately, Kelly and Nielsen agreed and came around to agree with the rest of the racists, the rest of the regime, and Kelly signed a cabinet declaration granting the military the authority. The move by Trump ran afoul of guidance by acting White House counsel Emmett Flood, who cautioned Trump it would likely run into constitutional roadblocks. The decision came after dozens of meetings. On Monday, CNN asked for an emergency hearing after Trump threatened to revoke Jim Acosta's press pass again. That afternoon, bowing to pressure, the White House said his press pass has been restored. On Monday, the White House issued new rules for reporters, including how they can ask questions. The press corp did not agree to the new rules, which the Correspondents Association said it had, quote, no role in crafting. On Monday, the Washington Post reported that a record request by liberal watchdog group American Oversight revealed that Ivanka Trump used a personal email account to send hundreds of emails about government business in 2017. Okay, so let's read that again. A record request by a watchdog group revealed Ivanka Trump used personal email account to send hundreds of emails about government business. White House ethic officials learned of the emails in responding to the request by the watchdog group. Emails were sent to White House aides, cabinet officials, and her assistants, many in violation of federal record rules. The private email account was shared with Jared Kushner. In the emails, she discussed or relayed official White House business. Say that again. She discussed or relayed official White House business. Ivanka's attorney claimed none of the messages contained classified information. The domain, which was named ijkfamily.com, how sweet, was set up by Ivanka and Jared in December 2016 through a Microsoft system. Emails were pre-screened for security problems by the Trump Organization. Yes, the same Trump Organization that we've discussed potentially has been in contact with Alpha Bank in Russia and was also potentially hacked with Russia. But that's all good. I feel very secure knowing that the Trump Organization is conducting security for White House business and not through the government server. Seems a little bit hypocritical now, doesn't it, folks? Ivanka discussed government policies and official business fewer than 100 times and shared her official schedule and travel plans with herself and personal assistants fewer than 1,000 times. On Tuesday, when asked by reporters, Trump defended Ivanka, saying, quote, just so you understand, Ivanka Trump did some emails. They were not classified like Hillary Clinton. And, quote, they were not deleted. That makes me feel much better. Trump also said, quote, Ivanka Trump can handle herself. They are in the historical record, no deletion whatsoever, adding, it is all fake news. When reporter April Ryan, a Black woman, asked Trump, Elijah Cummings wants to investigate Ivanka's emails. What do you say? Trump pointed at her, turned away, then asked the group, what else? Okay, so now we're going to talk about Whitaker, the acting attorney general, when we were still kind of sleepy and blurry-eyed the day after the midterms, catching our breath. Trump struck immediately, fired Sessions, and installed Whitaker, who has given us plenty of fodder each week. On Monday, Mueller's team filed a brief saying Mueller's powers are still intact, writing, Whitaker taking charge of the Russia probe neither alters the special counsel's authority nor raises any jurisdictional issue. The explanation came in response to a case brought by former Roger Stone aide Andrew Miller. On Monday, Senate Democrats, including Richard Blumenthal, Sheldon Whitehouse, and Mazie Hirono, sued to block Whitaker from serving as acting attorney general, saying his placement in the post was unconstitutional. The lawsuit, which is now the third filed to block Whitaker, cites that the Vacancy Reform Act does not allow for the appointment of people to cabinet-level positions who have not already been Senate confirmed. On Monday, CNN reported the watchdog group American Oversight said in a letter sent to the U.S. Office of Government Ethics that the Department of Justice had failed to provide a copy of Whitaker's public financial disclosure reports. Whitaker has likely had to file two sets of public financial disclosures since joining the Justice Department last year. Federal ethic law requires the reports be available to the public requesters within 30 days of their filing. So that's really strange. Why haven't those been made public? And then on Tuesday, the Washington Post reported Whitaker has received more than $1.2 million over 3 years from Foundation for Accountability and Civic Trust, which if you make it into an acronym is FACT, which is really kind of neat. FACT describes itself as a new watchdog non-for-profit, but it has no employees except for paying Whitaker $1.2 million, which brings us to what happened to all of Brett Kavanaugh's debt and who paid off all of that debt? Where did that go overnight? Anyways, back to FACT. Which says it is dedicated to exposing unethical conduct of all things by public officials. Again, has no employees, but allowed Whitaker to regularly appear in the media. In 2014, the IRS approved FACT for tax-exempt charity status, too. The Washington Post analyzed Whitaker's 200-plus television and radio appearances as head of FACT from 2014 to September 2017 and found an overwhelming focus on Democrats, including 750 mentions of Hillary Clinton and 185 of Mueller. This is, again, our acting attorney general. FACT was founded in 2012 under a different name and mission. At the time, Whitaker was a U.S. attorney with a legal practice in Iowa that paid him $79,000 a year. The source of funding for FACT remains unknown. So that's a pretty good deal if you're making, you know, U.S. attorney plus $79,000 a year to get $1.2 million for 3 years. That seems like a pretty good deal to me. On Tuesday, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer asked the Inspector General to investigate Whitaker's communications with the White House, citing concern he shared confidential information about the Mueller probe. Schumer also wants the Inspector General to investigate whether Whitaker, quote, provided any assurance to Trump or other White House officials regarding steps he or others may take related to the Mueller probe. But don't forget, on Sunday, Trump said he doesn't know anything about it. Okay, he just happened to pick him. He saw this large, burly guy walking down the hall and said this guy would be good. On Wednesday, CNN reported the Office of Special Counsel opened an investigation into a possible Hatch Act violation by Whitaker for taking donations for a 2014 Senate run while serving as chief of staff at the Department of Justice. The Hatch Act prohibits federal employees from accepting political contributions. The $8,800 of contributions were made in January and February of this year to repay debt from his unsuccessful run for a Senate seat in Iowa. Okay, so we have Whitaker going. And then on Tuesday, we get this bombshell by the New York Times reporting that Trump told former White House counsel Don McGahn in the spring of this year that he wanted to order the Department of Justice to prosecute two of his political adversaries, Hillary Clinton and James Comey. McGahn said no and told Trump he had no authority to order a prosecution. He also had White House lawyers write a memo warning Trump could face a range of consequences, including impeachment. Trump privately continued to float ideas like appointing a second special counsel to investigate Clinton and Comey because we are now a banana republic, so why not? He had also attacked the integrity of Department of Justice officials, saying they are on a, quote, witch hunt to bring him down. Trump has also been frustrated with his appointee at the FBI, Christopher Wray, who would not open an investigation on Clinton for her role in Uranium One and the Clinton Foundation, calling his appointee, quote, weak for not pursuing her. On Wednesday, here's a name we haven't heard for a while, Trump lawyer Rudy Giuliani told The Hill, quote, of course she, being Clinton, should have been investigated for obstruction of justice, citing, quote, destroying evidence in a gross and massive way. That sounds like somebody we know gave you a talking point. Gross and massive way. Did you think that up all by yourself, Rudy? By that, he was trying to refer to the deleted emails. Then more authoritarian behavior by Trump. On Tuesday, a federal judge blocked Trump's proclamation targeting some asylum seekers that we discussed in last week's podcast, ordering the Trump regime to resume accepting asylum claims from migrants no matter where or how they enter the U.S. Judge John Tugar of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals wrote, quote, whatever the scope of the president's authority, he may not rewrite the immigration laws to impose a condition that Congress has expressly forbidden. So Trump loved that. On Tuesday, when asked by a reporter about the ruling, Trump called it a, quote, disgrace and labeled the judge a, quote, Obama judge. On Wednesday, in a highly unusual public statement, when asked by an AP reporter, Chief Justice John Roberts rebutted Trump's statement, saying a, quote, independent judiciary is something we should all be thankful for. Roberts also said, quote, we do not have Obama judges or Trump judges, Bush judges or Clinton judges, adding, quote, what we have is an extraordinary group of dedicated judges doing their level best. On Wednesday, Trump responded in 2 tweets saying, quote, sorry, Chief Justice John Roberts, but you do indeed have an Obama judge. Adding, it would be great if the Ninth Circuit was indeed an independent judiciary. Trump also tweeted, quote, please study the numbers. They are shocking. We need protection and security. These rulings are making our country unsafe, very dangerous and unwise. On Wednesday, also in something not normal, the American Bar Association took the unusual step of issuing a statement criticizing Trump's attack on the Ninth Circuit Court, saying judicial independence is critical to American democracy. The ABA also said, quote, when government officials question a court's motives, mock its legitimacy, or threaten retaliation, they erode the court's standing and hinder the court from performing their constitutional duties. But Trump wasn't done yet. On Thursday, Thanksgiving Day, Trump tweeted, quote, John Roberts can say all he wants, but the Ninth Circuit is a complete and total disaster, adding, quote, it is out of control, has a horrible reputation. Trump later tweeted, 79% of decisions have been overturned in the Ninth Circuits, citing Fox News. Trump also called the Ninth Circuit a dangerous disgrace and a dumping ground for easy wins and delays. In a scathing series of tweets, George Conway, Kellyanne Conway's husband, refuted Trump's claims about the Ninth Circuit as untrue. I also want to talk about the story. Last week, we discussed that our CIA had, with a high level of confidence, determined that the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia was behind the killing of the Washington Post journalist Jamal Khashoggi. On Monday, Reuters reported Germany halted all arms sales to Saudi Arabia and imposed a travel ban on the 18 Saudis linked to the murder of the journalist from entering the 26 countries in the EU. See, that's what you do when you're a democracy and a world leader. As opposed to, on Tuesday, in an extraordinary statement, Trump sided with the Saudi crown prince over the findings by U.S. national intelligence agencies on the killing of Khashoggi. Trump's 633-word crude statement with exclamation points, 8 of them, ignoring known facts, stated, quote, it could very well be that the Crown Prince had knowledge of this tragic event. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. Trump added, quote, we may never know all the facts surrounding the murder. In any case, our relationship with the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, adding, Iran's crimes are worse than anything Saudi Arabia has done. In his statement, Trump also came close to embracing the conspiracy theory of Khashoggi's critics in Saudi Arabia that he was a member of Muslim Brotherhood and a, quote, enemy of the state. Trump also wrote, the world is a very dangerous place, and repeated his false claim that alienating the Saudis would put a $110 billion in military sales at risk. So far, just $14.5 billion in sales have been booked. On Wednesday, when asked by reporters if he was motivated by personal gain, as if they had to ask, Trump said, quote, I don't make deals with Saudi Arabia. I don't have money in Saudi Arabia, which is basically something he refuted with his own words throughout his campaign, bragging about all his deals with Saudi Arabia. Trump also falsely claimed siding with Saudis would keep the price of oil down, telling reporters if we break our relationship, we will, quote, see oil prices go to $150 a barrel. The Saudis are considering, that's what Trump said. In reality, the Saudis are considering cutting output. On Tuesday, the editorial board of Washington Post condemned Trump, saying he slandered Khashoggi and betrayed American values, and his actions let dictators know they can murder their critics and suffer no consequences. The Post editorial board compared Trump's move with his siding with Putin on the Russian interference in the 2016 election, saying he had a, quote, affinity for a brutal and reckless leader by disregarding the findings of the U.S. intelligence. It's like we keep seeing this movie again and again, Trump cozying up to authoritarian leaders and can't seem to get along with really mean people like Justin Trudeau and Macron and Merkel. Okay. On Tuesday, the Wall Street Journal reported Saudi Arabia is also accused of torturing at least 8 of the 18 women rights activists imprisoned this year without being formally charged with a crime. At least one tried to commit suicide. Torturing women is unprecedented, according to activists in Saudi Arabia. At least four were subjected to electric shocks and lashings. One was sexually assaulted, and many were kept in solitary confinement for several months. On Wednesday, Trump celebrated low oil prices, tweeting, "Enjoy! $54 was just $82. Thank you to Saudi Arabia, but let's go lower." Experts say the fallen price has little to do with Saudi Arabia. On Friday, the Wall Street Journal, again owned by Robert Murdoch, reported that the recent downtrend in oil prices is due to a large surge in crude production from the U.S. petroleum industry, combined with a weakened global growth, not related to Saudis and OPEC output. On Thursday, Denmark and Finland joined Germany in halting arms sales to Saudi Arabia. So again, our decline of who we are in the world. And we have long stopped being the moral leader that we once were as a country. Speaking of moral leader, on Thursday, as Vice President Pence stood in for Trump at the Association of the Southern Asian Nations, because Trump didn't feel like going, even though most world leaders were there, Pence broke from Trump, directly confronting Russian President Vladimir Putin on election interference. According to a Washington Post reporter who spoke to Pence of his conversation, Pence told him, quote, "So I looked at him and said, we know what happened in 2016, adding, I'm very aware that you've said about that, what you've said about that, and I'm telling you, we're not having it." When he says we, Trump is having it, but apparently Pence is not having it. So again, just keep a little eye on that, because in the beginning of the week, Trump was questioning Pence's loyalty, and Pence almost sounds like somebody who is doing his job. On Wednesday, Mueller's team urged a judge to deny a request from former Trump official George Papadopoulos to delay the commencement of his 2-week jail sentence, which is scheduled to begin on Monday. George Papadopoulos' attorney filed a motion saying sentencing should be delayed pending the case challenging the constitutionality of Mueller's appointment as special counsel. On Wednesday, AP reported Trump was set to be interviewed by Mueller's team on January 27th at Camp David, but Trump's lawyers balked. John Dowd, who was the attorney back then, sent a feisty letter instead, disputing Mueller's authority to question Trump. Reportedly, Trump wanted to do the interview back in January, but Trump's lawyers, after being informed of the 16 topics Mueller wanted to cover, remember that was in the weekly list, from Mueller's team, then they canceled the interview. This week, Trump's lawyers handed over his written answers to some of Mueller's questions after a hard-fought battle to compromise. Trump answered only questions about Russian interference in the 2016 election. Trump's team refused to answer questions about whether he has tried to obstruct the investigation into possible coordination between Russia and his campaign. It is unclear if Mueller intends to push for more answers. On Thursday, House Republicans subpoenaed James Comey and Loretta Lynch, happy Thanksgiving, to testify privately before them while they still have the chairmanship of the committee, not for long. Comey tweeted, quote, "I will resist a closed door thing because I've seen enough of their selective leaking and distortion." On Friday, the Washington Post reported Jerome Corsi, an associate of Trump and Roger Stone, is in plea negotiations with Mueller's team. Corsi provided research on Democratic figures during the 2016 campaign to Stone. Corsi cooperating could shed light on whether Trump or his advisors were connected to and had knowledge of WikiLeaks release of hacked Democratic emails in 2016, a key part of Mueller's inquiry. More great reporting by Jane Mayer in The New Yorker, reporting that Emma Bryant, an expert on disinformation at George Washington University, has unearthed new emails from October 2015, revealing the earliest documented role played by Steve Bannon in Brexit. Emails show Bannon, then vice president of Cambridge Analytica, remember what I keep saying, keep an eye on Cambridge Analytica, owned largely by Robert Mercer, was in the loop for discussions with leaders of Leave.eu, a far-right nationalist organization. Mueller's investigation into foreign interference in Trump's election and British probes into Brexit have increasingly become interwoven. Interesting. Let's not forget Brexit happened right before the U.S. election, and there's a lot of common players in both and potentially Russian money in both. We've talked about that in the past. So both Mueller's team and British probes are focusing on the role of Russian ambassador to the UK, Alexander Yakovenko. They are also both investigators from both countries looking at the role of Nigel Farage, the former leader of a far-right group that was an ally of Bannon and Trump and also visited Julian Assange in 2017. So you can see how these worlds are colliding and getting smaller as the Mueller probe hopefully draws to an end. And then we had Thanksgiving, and we know what a glorious leader Trump is and how he would just be so uplifting on this great American holiday. On Thursday, Trump started the day tweeting "Happy Thanksgiving" to all in capital letters and quickly devolved to warning of, quote, "bedlam, chaos, injury, and death at the U.S.-Mexican border if law enforcement cannot do their job." In a morning press gaggle, when asked by reporters at Mar-a-Lago what he was thankful for, Trump responded, quote, "for having a great family and for having made a tremendous difference in this country. I've made a tremendous difference in this country. This country is so much stronger now than when I took office that you wouldn't believe it." When asked how he would rate the job he is doing, Trump responded, quote, "look, I hate to do it, but I will do it. I will give myself an A+. Is that enough? Can I go higher than that?" Trump also broke from tradition using the Thanksgiving morning conference call with military members in five countries overseas to instead weigh in on several controversial political issues. Trump again criticized the Ninth Circuit Court, saying, quote, "we got a lot of bad court decisions from the Ninth Circuit, which has become a big thorn in our side." All right, I have to stop here. Courts aren't a thorn in your side. You don't control the judiciary branch, even though you're trying. But this is how he thinks. Okay, Trump added, quote, "we always lose, then you hopefully win at the Supreme Court." Trump also said, "it's a terrible thing when judges tell you how to protect your border," calling it a disgrace. Later in the day, he said judicial activism prevented security officials from protecting the border. In this call with, again, this is on a conference call with our military operating overseas, military commanders, publicly broadcast, Trump blamed, quote, the world for the death of Khashoggi, dismissing the findings of the CIA that Saudi Crown Prince MBS was to blame, instead claiming the Crown Prince hated the death even more than Trump did. That could be true. After claiming, quote, nobody's done more for the military than me, Trump made numerous false claims about the military and asked commanders what they were seeing in their regions on a call which is publicly broadcasted. Trump also bragged about sending troops to the U.S.-Mexico border, even as the troops are being pulled back, and expressed no doubts about the constitutionality of giving soldiers the right to use lethal force there. Trump had Thanksgiving dinner at Mar-a-Lago, which he has dubbed the Southern White House, hosting a large crowd of more than 500 paying members along with his family, because we get to make money every chance we can. Before leaving for Mar-a-Lago, however, Trump bemoaned to reporters, quote, being president has cost me a fortune. In addition to businesses like the Trump Hotel DC, Mar-a-Lago is now charging $200,000 a person for members. NBC News calculated that in Trump's first 673 days in office, he has spent almost one-third, that's 217 out of 673 days at a Trump property, and about one-quarter, or 165 days, golfing at a Trump golf property. On Friday, the New York State Supreme Court threw out Trump's motion to dismiss and said the New York Attorney General's lawsuit against the Trump Foundation can proceed. The judge noted a separate case is determined Trump is not immune to civil actions while serving as head of state and said allegations of wrongdoing were strong enough to let the case go forward. Also on Friday, we had, you know, well, everybody's on vacation. It's a Friday after Thanksgiving. We had some huge important information data dumps. The White House quietly released a massive new federal report by the National Climate Assessment, warning that national disasters like wildfires and hurricanes are worsening because of global warming. The report warned found warming changes extremes have already become more frequent, intense, widespread, or of long duration, and contradicted Trump, who has been unwilling to acknowledge global warming as a cause. The report warned of worsening conditions, noting the last few years have smashed U.S. records for damaging weather, costing the U.S. nearly $400 billion since 2015. A co-author noted the recent wildfires in Northern California that we've been talking about can be attributed to climate change, saying, quote, a warm, dry climate has increased the areas burned over the last 20 years. The report found the lower 48 states have warmed 1.8 degrees since 1900, with 1.2 degrees in the last few decades alone. By the end of this century, the U.S. will be 3 to 12 degrees hotter. The report, written by outside scientists and officials from 13 federal agencies, was released on Friday afternoon, the day after Thanksgiving, prompting advocates to accuse the Trump regime of trying to bury it. Trump tweeted about cold weather on Wednesday, saying, quote, brutal and extended cold blasts could shatter all records and caps. Whatever happened to global warming? Trump tweeted again on Thursday, this is the coldest weather in the history of Thanksgiving Day parade in New York City and one of the coldest Thanksgivings on record. The report addressed this directly, saying, quote, over short timescales and smaller geographic regions, the influence of natural variability can be larger than the influence of human activity. Over climate timescales of multiple decades, however, global temperatures continue to steadily increase. But that's already like probably more sentences put together than Trump's entire daily briefing or anything he reads an entire day. So I'm sure that would go over his head. On Tuesday, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention issued a food safety alert warning to consumers to throw away romaine lettuce, which became kind of a funny meme this week. for a not funny reason, due to another outbreak of E. coli that sickened 37 people in 11 states. And then a report resurfaced that was done by Wired that found diseased outbreaks linked to food have been increasing, and that the Obama Food and Drug Administration had actually issued rules requiring produce growers to begin testing their water starting in 2018. However, Trump's FDA, bowing to pressure from the farm industry and Trump's overarching dictate to eliminate regulations, earlier this year shelved the water testing rules for at least 4 years. But no worries, Trump and Mar-a-Lago guests were spared from their romaine lettuce scare on Thanksgiving. An FDA commissioner came out Friday morning and said the lettuce that was contaminated originated in California. So there you go. The other news dump on Friday was The Hollywood Reporter, of all people, revealed Bill Shine, the White House communications chief, will be paid by both the White House and Trump ally Fox News this year and next, according to his financial disclosure forms, which came out Friday after Thanksgiving. Shine started his White House position on July 5th and had an unusually long extension of 68 days for filing this form before Whitaker released it again on the Friday after Thanksgiving, same day as the climate report while everybody's on vacation. Just one final odd and end as we close out this week. In a departure of its nearly 100-year tradition of having a comedian headline its roast, the White House Correspondents Association president announced biographer Ron Chernow will headline this year instead. They're using a historian instead of a comedian. So with that, folks, we close out a week that, under normal times, there wouldn't be a lot of news over a Thanksgiving holiday week. This week we had 160 not normal items. If you've enjoyed this broadcast, please remember to rate it and share that you're listening to it on your social media. I suspect we're going to have a lot to talk about as we get back to business after the holidays next week. Until then, keep up the fight and stay tuned. We'll be in touch.